Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. My name is Barry Cassidy and I'll be bringing you the latest news and updates from the world of agriculture over the next 20 minutes or so. The rain has returned after a smashing few days, but spring has well and truly sprung since we last spoke. I spent this morning checking up on some lambs out the field, so I'm glad to come to you from a warm, dry studio. We have a busy show ahead with the latest cap updates and news from the tillage fields. But first, we're heading to Cork. Our man in the know, Tommy Moyes, sat down with Bandon Mart manager Tom McCarthy, who steps down this week after 15 years in the role. Tom had the latest on calf prices, along with some reflections on his career.
Calves have been steady enough this spring. There was, I suppose, concern. There's always concern, but they seem to be holding pretty well.
Yeah, I suppose the Friesian, the shipping type calf, I suppose, is slightly back today. I would say, I suppose, that again, that's on the news that the boats are going to be cancelled again until Saturday. There's no fierce run at the shipping calves yet. Like, they were held up for a couple of weeks. They got going last week, and the news with the bad weather forecast that again is putting a little bit of pressure on, we'll say, the shipping type one or the lower quality Friesian bull calf. The good Friesian bull, as you're aware, Tammy, yourself there, you'll be monitoring the prices, have held very well. You know, there's still the good Friesian bull calf is worth, look, from 110 to 170 or 80 euros, and there's plenty farmer activity for the good one. And then on the whiteheads and on the Anguses and on the curragh calves, sure, they're as dear today as they were all spring. You know, yeah, there's great demand for the good quality ones. Like, you're talking a month old Angus or whited bull calf, you're talking nearly 300 euros now. Like, in something stronger, you're talking 350 upwards.
Yeah.
So great demand for a young animal. It's a good price.
Good position to be in. Yeah. Your older cattle, it's early in the year yet, I suppose. Weather's only kind of becoming good for grass in the last fortnight.
Yeah.
How are you seeing things go?
Yeah, I suppose, look, cattle numbers have been slowish and sluggish enough there over the last few weeks. But look, there'll come a point where people will have to bite the bullet and move. But look, the trade is very good. Like, you're seeing young Anguses there, which are, look, they're the hot sellers at the moment. You know, the 300 to 450 kilo Anguses, ranging from, look, from 2 euros a kilo up to 230 a kilo. Like, there's serious demand for them. There's serious demand there for the good Charlies, for the good Continentals. There's great demand, as always, for the traditional whiteheads. There's always men there for them. So there's nothing wrong with facing the market at the moment. You know, I wouldn't have any hesitation in it. And but look, they will start coming, Tommy. They'll start coming over the next couple of weeks. You'll see when the number pressure will come on yards.
Yeah, and this is your last sale here in Bendon?
Well, it's not my last sale. Thursday will be my last sale. I have a dairy sale on Thursday here. But look, this is my last Monday calf sale. Looking forward to having my bank holidays back again, Tommy, after 15 years. But look, been a great 15 years. I've met some great people. I've met some great friends. I've worked with some of the best people that you could work with. And it's been a pleasure to work with them and to have known them. Look, we've had some highs and lows like everybody else in the market business. Look, I suppose
the Celtic Tiger proved a bit of a challenge in your earlier days here, I suppose, didn't it?
I suppose it did. Like, sure, there wasn't as much interest in the farming as there was over the last few years. The builders probably had took over most of that. But look, come here, Tommy, a few years ago, like, we had nearly 2,500 calves here on a Monday and 800 or 900 cattle. You know, like, there was a great buzz in putting that through on a day, and it went through. Look, courtesy and well done to all the staff there. It wasn't just me. But, you know, everything ran smooth, yeah, and there was a huge and great buzz, you know. So I'm always proud to say that, you know, that I have that under my belt. Look, and Skipperine as well, look, the home of great quality continental cattle, you know. Very proud to have said that I've worked down there as well. And of all the people that I've met down all over West Cork, you know, some outstanding farmers. They are leaders. It's part of them, but they are leaders in their field. Like, they are. People would ring me from all over the country to what the West Cork farmer is doing now. And he's always 2 to 3 weeks ahead of what they might be thinking somewhere else. And it's been a pleasure to work with them. You know, it's been an absolute pleasure to work with them. And look, hopefully my new role, I'll be back in contact with most of them again. So, Yeah, look, it's been a great honour. It's been a great honour to be working with Kirkmarts and to be, again, to be doing the job I've done. But look, there comes a time when when something comes in front of you to take opportunities, and I went to this. So look, best of luck to whoever will be getting the job, and to yourselves in the Farmers Journal, and to all the people that I've met. Thank you very much.
Super. Thank you, Tom, and best of luck in the new role.
And you can hear the passion in Tom's voice for the job, despite so many years at the ring. We'll have full coverage from that sale and others in this week's Farmers Journal. We're heading to the tillage fields next, or rather, a tillage-heavy Zoom. Our specialists in the area, Siobhan Walsh, Andy Doyle, and Stephen Robb, dialed in to discuss what's happening in fields around the country. Spring beans, potatoes, and muck would be an appropriate summary.
This is Andy Doyle, and I'm joined by my colleagues in the Farmers Journal, Stephen Robb and Siobhan Walsh, and we're just going to do a very quick run around as to what's happening in the tillage fields around the country this week. We've had a spell of quite good weather. Not everything was as good as we might like it at the end of that. But look, there has been work done, and for that we're thankful. If I can go to you first, Siobhan, you live in Laois. Can I ask, you know, what's been happening around you in as much as you know from talking to farmers, etc.?
Plenty of activity over the last few days, Andy. Fertiliser has gone out on winter barley. There's a few people catching up on spraying. Look, ground conditions are very varied. There's still quite a lot of land that's very wet, and was, you know, water lying on plenty of land, you know, a week ago. So there's plenty of drying still to do. And unfortunately now the weather is broken, so work has stopped. But look, a lot of spring barley a nice bit of spring barley gone in, people trying to get their distilling barley in early, and, you know, use their dry ground to do that. But still, over the weekend, people got what they could sown, and they've run out of dry ground now. And then there's a good few beans gone in as well. So I think that's kind of the run of it in this area, Andy.
Okay, thanks, Siobhan. Stephen, if I can go you're living in Donegal, you have the tentacles of the tramline farmers. Can I ask what's been happening in your part of the world?
I suppose up here in the northwest in general, looks quite similar. So does there's a fair amount of field work going on, but no sowing. The guys out spraying fertilizer, ground conditions are just about there, no more. And that's very much the, you know, the case with the tramline network as well. I've been chatting to a few guys over the day now around the country, and as Siobhan says, you know, a lot of guys have kind of run out of dry ground. Anything they could be in, that they were in, and now it's just a case of waiting for the rest of it to dry. But the comment everyone is saying is the ground is still cold, and that's very true. That's on the grain end of things, but I suppose it's important to note as well that the potato harvest is still ongoing, particularly up here. Anyone who wasn't able to complete the potato harvest last year, last autumn, have made good progress over the dry week. But I suppose we just have to remember that the reason why we couldn't get it harvested in the first place is because the ground was wet. So therefore, the ground is still pretty wet, to be perfectly honest with you. So it's been a challenge now. Equally, there has been some planting going on down the country, particularly around Wexford, and a fair bit of ground preparation as well. You'll see potatoes being planted this week and potatoes being harvested this week, depending on what part of the country that you're in, Andy.
And Stephen, is there beet to come out, or has the last of the beet, as far as you know, kind of come out at this point?
Yeah, we're definitely on the tail end of things. So we are chatting to a few guys now in the key beet growing areas, and supplies are actually beginning to tighten, which is good. But we are coming to the end of it. So still some beet to be pulled, but definitely coming towards the end of it.
Okay, I've been talking to some people across the south of the country over the last few days, and the story is pretty much identical to what you've both relayed. There has been some planting done. People have taken the opportunity to get fertilizer and get largely caught up with spraying, or at least as much as it can be for the moment. Planting of I suppose beans was the major crop sown when people were going into semi-marginal conditions, but there certainly was some barley and some spring wheat and oats planted as well. So look at all in all, for the early March, the middle of the second week in March, probably a lot more done than was done this time last year, that's for sure. And hopefully the conditions won't be too bad in the next few days and that people will get back out onto the land again soon. I think, Stephen, a comment you made about land being cold, I think that should still echo. You know, land will never get lively in terms of growth, in terms of being suited to good cultivation until it warms up. And that certainly hasn't happened yet. But hopefully it won't be too long more. But it's early days, plenty of time to get it done yet. And we hope for good conditions as we go forward. Stephen and Siobhan, thank you both very much.
Always good to hear from Team Tillage. And hopefully there's a dry spell on the way, as well as some heat. That's all we have for the first half of the show, but join us after the break, where we'll be getting our teeth into the armchair farmer issue.
Scrappage scheme for entitlements. For more in your Farmer's Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
Department float scheme to cash in small farm entitlements. Spotlight turns to Davy Stockbroker's role in trading Kerry Co-op shares. The Farmer's Journal investigates. Armchair farmers versus genuine farmers. Farm organisations have their say. Was the old rep scheme as good as you remember? We crunch the numbers. And TB vaccination for cattle could be possible in 5 to 10 years.
Plus, don't miss your free 48-page machinery price guide. Only inside this week's Irish Farmer's Journal. On sale now.
Hello and welcome back. As you probably all know, cap reform has been chugging along at a snail's pace, but the sprint to the finish looks set to break out at any moment. One of the key issues yet to be decided is the definition of a genuine farmer. This will essentially decide who can and can't receive direct payments. In this week's Farmers Journal, we have the views of the 5 main farm organisations on what their definition is. Phelim O'Neill and I sat down to analyse them.
I'm joined now by Phelim O'Neill, our markets and EU specialist. Phelim, I guess we're sitting down here to have a discussion on what could be one of the more grandlier points of the next Common Agricultural Policy, which is the definition of a genuine farmer. It's something that's been on the table for quite some time, and it's happening now, I guess.
It is indeed, and I have to first of all, Barry, commend you on the work that you've done in this week's Farmers Journal and pulling together the views of the different farm organisations in the country. And as you know yourself, and I suppose everyone that's listening to this and will have read the Irish Farmers Journal this week, I think we all know in our minds what a genuine farmer looks like and who isn't a genuine farmer. But the difficulty arises when we come to putting it on paper. And I think that's where this piece of work here provides a considerable service, because it does systematically outline and describe how each of the farm organisations believe that a genuine farmer and how they should be defined.
Yeah, and I think when we look at it, it is something that probably every farmer will have said at some point, God, we don't want the payments going to X, or we don't want the payments going to Y. And as the department admits itself, even if we do get this definition right and we do take the money back off those people, there's not a huge amount being drawn out of the cap. I think the figure is something like 2% of people leasing out all their entitlements. But I guess it's the justification for the cap and the justification of those supports that they are going to the active farmer.
And it's an emotional issue as well, Barry, you know, for the people that are getting their hands dirty, that are putting the Wellingtons on in the morning to go down the yard to do the actual work. I think as well, you know, people would do well to consider the piece that's contributed by our colleague, the Northern editor, David Wright, on this from the NIA experience going back a few years now, 2015. And certainly there was a huge effort put in the north to get a genuine farmer defined there. But even with all of that, and when we do tie down and get the definition in place, whatever that might be at whatever rate or whatever stocking rates required, you still will have the potential for people to set up convoluted management forums if they choose to do so. But again, you make a good point there. It's a relatively small number of people, so we're probably not best not to obsess too much about this. The important thing, I think, is that a mechanism is agreed and a level of consensus between the farm organisations and the department is achieved to allow us to get the vast amount of money going to the people that are calving the cow or lambing the ewe, milking the cow, sowing the seed, ploughing the land, doing whatever that we all know is involved in actual farming and doing the work. And I think there's enough here when you look at the different contributions from the different organisations to probably draw a line somewhere through the middle of it that won't please everyone. And again, I think the farm organisations here have to be commended for being very frank frank and very engaging on this and taking a position. But I think if you look at this, you can find a degree of commonality in it that will certainly allow us to get to a point where we will deal with most cases, not all of them, but most cases.
Yeah, I think one thing that struck me maybe across the few contributions, and there's five of them there, but the majority of the farm org seem to be in general support of quite a low bar stocking rate, the one that's used in the ANC at present, which is 0.15 livestock units a hectare for at least 7 months of the year. Now, obviously, tillage farmers would be exempt from that, but you then, in that case, would have to prove that you're selling a crop or growing or harvesting a crop from the land in that case. I guess some of the more interesting points, you've seen the ICMSA, they've kind of opted for a product output, which would be 50% of a Pillar 1 payment going to that farmer. MOCRA actually seems to have probably the most stringent set of conditions in that they're looking
for. And a very business focused approach, if you like, with their whole CPT development and structured style to it. Bringing maybe, as we might expect from the young farmers who are the most imaginative and creative and probably the best educated generation of farmers so far in history, they have brought a whole very professional approach to it. And again, some good ideas there. But at the same time, you know, it's achieving a model that not necessarily fits the young 20 to 35 year old farmer. It has to fit all categories and all ages. The bit about the macro one as well is the transitioning at the end of a farming career. Because again, this is something that we have talked about frequently in the past and never quite achieved, is to find a structure for farmers to retire with dignity and pass the business on, if you like, to the next generation. That's something that should merit some attention and focus as well this time around.
Yeah, and I guess it comes back to that farmers are a diverse group, from, you know, a young person starting out to someone who's been doing it all their life. You know, these people farm in different ways, and it's, you know, as I say, get a definition to fit them all. I guess the other thing that these definitions are going after really are the leasing out of entitlements. I mean, it's referenced in several of them. For example, the ICSA saying that you should have an upper amount of time that you can lease them out for, 7 years in total. ICMSA saying that a person who loans or leases out all their entitlements can't be considered a genuine farmer, and they can't draw down a direct payment in that case. So if people are trying to find a different ways of going
out. And that I would suggest, Barry, is the area that will cause most difficulty, particularly for the larger all-catching, all-grouping farm organisations, such as, for example, the IFA or such a broad church at the end of the day. You know, there will be a very strong campaign mounted by farmers that you might describe, in this case, less active, that have built up a good land holding over the years, that have leased out these. And the argument there will be created around that, well, look, this is the product of a lifetime's work in farming to build these entitlements up, and therefore they shouldn't be taken away from them at a stroke of a pen. And you can see that point as well. But the difficulty here is to reconcile a position, because remember, it's not just farmers that we have to think about here. The whole Common Agriculture Policy next time round, you know, that is moving to such a strong environmental focus, we have to have general society buy into it as well. And the idea of money going to a landowner doesn't sit well in many parts of Europe, particularly where there is a disconnect, if you like, from the land. We might have an understanding in Ireland. That's not shared across the EU by any means. So, you know, that is an area that will prove difficult for some people in it. But again, it is part of the trend here is getting the money to the person that gets their hands dirty. I think that is the definition that I would fall back on in terms of what is a real genuine farmer.
And we want to hear from our readers and viewers too. There is a feedback form available on www.ifj.ie/genuinefarmer, where you can give us your definition. And finally, Phelim's not just up to speed on CAP, he's our in-house Brexit guru too. This week he spoke to Michael Haverty from Anderson's Consulting Group to hear how UK exporters are coping with the new Brexit reality.
Michael, we've now had 2 full months of trade in the new era with the returning to rules that existed prior to the single market. Reports from industry suggest that there are many people having difficulties. Is that your experience on the ground as well, or are businesses functioning pretty much close to normal?
Good morning, Phelim. Yes, on the ground, what we're hearing is that there are difficulties in terms of the new trading relationship, particularly around customs declarations, rules of origin, sanitary and phytosanitary checks. Now, there are organisations that have functioned quite well, some smaller, some larger scale organisations also. But overall, we are hearing of difficulties, particularly in terms of the protocol and how that's implemented and getting product from Great Britain across to Northern Ireland.
Yeah, and again, UK has taken some unilateral decisions there to extend that in the past week. But in terms of exporters, and we think of things like, I suppose, sheep meat and to a lesser extent beef, a lot of pig meat. In terms of sales to the European Union, to the continent of Europe, if you like, from Britain, the trade associations are expressing, disappointment or highlighting the difficulties. Is that just a case of preparation on the part of industry? Is some companies struggling because they haven't prepared, others functioning okay because they have?
You know, certainly we have heard reports of some companies are continuing to trade, and whilst there is additional friction, they are getting on with it. Having said that, though, given that the trade and cooperation agreement was only finalised a week before the transition period ending, it did not give enough time for large swathes of the industry to prepare. And as a result, what we've seen, particularly in January, has been that companies have been caught by rules of origin, in particular around issues around the re-exporting of goods being a major issue, but also in terms of the checks, not just going from Britain across into the European continent, but also from Britain going into Northern Ireland. And that has been a major issue that has caught companies. Some are adapting, some are getting used to it. But I think longer term, there are going to be some significant changes to supply chains as well, which we need to be aware of.
You've mentioned Northern Ireland again within the last week. Now, the UK government has unilaterally announced some extensions there. Does this mark a change in policy? The agreement had been signed off only a few weeks ago to this protocol and with the deadlines on it. Does this UK unilateral action suggest a change in policy by UK government in being more robust in their dealings with the EU?
Certainly there is a change of tone, and I think with David Frost now being in his cabinet position, Michael Gove and Mr. Sefcovic, that relationship worked quite well. I think the new relationship will be somewhat more confrontational. I think a deal will be done and, you know, issues will be resolved eventually. However, we are into a period of turbulence, and yes, there will be more robustness from a UK side, particularly in terms of the perspective that UK has its own independent trade policy now, and it wants to let the European Union be aware of that. It's not going to necessarily follow EU rules, but I think there's still scope to mutually agree upon some of these issues.
Final question, Michael, then, is we're aware that UK have deferred implementation of the checks, both in terms of documentation and physical inspections. They had two targets. One was the 1st of April, the other the 1st of July. Are the many reports in media over the weekend and in other commentary suggesting that the UK is not going to be ready for the 1st of April deadline. Do you have any insight there at all?
I think I'd certainly echo the concerns, and it's what we've been hearing across the industry more recently, that the veterinary capacity is not there for that significant increase that would take place in terms of managing certification and documentation that would come in from the 1st of April. So we wouldn't be surprised if we saw a deferment to that in terms of the implementation of the UK's border operating model. We think that's quite likely where things stand at the moment.
And of course, they can decide to do that unilaterally without any consultation with anyone.
Yes, that's part of UK trade policy. It has its own independent trade policy now. So, yes, would be good. I think other parties would like to be notified of it, but it is within the UK's remit.
It's within their gift. Michael, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Phelim.
And I'm sure it's not the last we'll hear on the Northern Protocol. But it is all that we have time for this week. So thank you for joining me. My sound engineer was Claire Nash, and I'll be seeing you again next week for our Paddy's Day podcast.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.